That's not just the sound of that first sip of Morning Joe. It's the sound of someone shopping for a car on Carvana from the comfort of home.
That's a good blend.
It's time to take it easy, like answering some easy questions to get pre-qualified for a car in minutes.
Talk about starting the morning right.
Just like customizing your terms so your car fits your budget.
Mm-mm-mm.
Visit Carvana.com or download the app to experience car shopping the way it should be. Convenient. Comfortable. Ah.
Man, that sunset is gorgeous.
Grill, patio, sunset. Hard to get better than that. Unless you're browsing Carvana's inventory while you soak it all in.
Oh, burger time.
So sit back, get comfortable. Carvana's got thousands of cars under $20,000 just waiting for you.
I could stay here forever.
Carvana, where car buying meets comfort, meets convenience. Download the app or visit Carvana.com today.
Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, the show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and is also the show that thinks there's way too much football on TV but is still furious there was no game on Monday night. I had to do a family quiz. I'm Kevin Day and he is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire, a man whose family has been quizzed many times. mainly under caution, I think it's fair to say, Kieran, isn't it?
harsh but fair, Kevin.
Now, Kieran, it might not be a long pod today because for once, hurrah, there's no major bad news. Plus, you and I have contrasting things to do afterwards. You're off on a virtual trip to Barcelona and I'm off for a meeting with Razor Ruddock, which is also virtual, thank God. I'm not looking forward to the pubs opening, to be perfectly honest. So what are you up to on your virtual trip to Barcelona? Sounds exciting.
I've been asked to talk to a number of people who are presently studying Barcelona Football Club's financial results to try to get an understanding as to the financial issues surrounding the club. I think it's highly unlikely that the club will go out of business. But even so, there's quite a few eyebrow raising numbers in their finances, and they're going to have a challenging year. Even under the new president, he's not going to find it a walk in the park.
Well, you heard it here first, folks. And funny enough, our first news story will take us eventually to UEFA, but via FIFA, who's published their latest accounts. Any backhanders for you in there, Kieran, for keeping quiet?
Only cash ones, Kevin. You know, that's the nature of the beast. It's been a really tough year for FIFA. They lost $778 million.
Whoa.
Which is as big numbers go, that's big with a capital F, and it is linked to COVID in the sense that they couldn't really run any tournaments during 2020. Mm. So revenue was down by two-thirds. It's also the fact that if you do take a look at FIFA's accounts, which funnily enough I do, 3 years out of every four, they tend to lose money because...
Of course, yeah.
Yeah, with due respect, nobody's interested in the under-17 World Cup. The Club World Cup isn't really hitting the mark. The Confederations Cup, which takes place the year before the World Cup, it gets some interest, but not much. So FIFA has always been very very dependent upon a successful World Cup competition, and it is normally a successful World Cup competition for FIFA, partly due to the relationship that FIFA will have with the host nation, in that it always insists on being classified as a charity and doesn't pay any tax on the back of that. Mm. So we've seen FIFA's money coming in down by two thirds, and then it's given out £270 million in COVID support. So that's 1 million per individual member of FIFA, and there's 211 members. There's been £2 million for each confederation, such as UEFA and CONCACAF and things of that nature, CAF and so on. And then the women's game has been given £72 million as well to ensure that it continues its development recently. I then took a look at some of the costs, the wage bill for FIFA, and I think producer Guy even might be considering sending in his CV. $199 million for just over 1,000 staff. So that works out as an average salary. And remember, that includes everybody from the people that are dealing with sort of the admin work to, upwards. The average salary worked out as $188,000.
Wow.
With our good friend Gianni Infantino at the top of the pile with just over $3 million, which included bonuses. I'm not quite sure what the bonuses were for because to give somebody such a large bonus on the back of losing £778 million does seem slightly at odds.
Well, it's a sort of organisation that gives you a bonus for not bankrupting it, Kieran, isn't it, essentially?
But
just for new listeners, Kieran, whose eyebrows may not yet have had the same exercise as mine had over the year, that the business about FIFA being registered as a charity when it comes to the World Cup, just explain that, because I still can't get my head around that concept.
Well, as part of the when individual countries are proposing to host the World Cup, they will be assessed by FIFA, and they have to go through a series of controls and regulations, one of which isn't officially linked to the proposal to host the competition, but FIFA will normally be involved in some form of discussions with the national government where the finals are being hosted. And during the course of conversations, it tends to come up that we're a wonderful organization, FIFA. We are, we look after the game on a global basis. We don't see ourselves as a commercial organization, more as a charitable organization. Mm. And on that basis, we're going to make a lot of money out of the World Cup, and we'd rather not pay any tax on that. Just out of interest, what is your reaction to that? Remember, we've not yet made the decision as to where the World Cup's being hosted. Nothing illegal. It's only a suggestion from FIFA, but it's a suggestion which seems to go down in favour with practically every country that decides to apply for the competition.
Yeah, well, Kieran, as we're talking about charity, let's be charitable and suggest that perhaps Russia and Qatar would have been only too pleased to donate billions of money to charity through FIFA under any circumstances. which leads us nicely onto another piece of FIFA-related news, because they've taken their eye off the financial ball to keep the Sepp Blatter plate spinning, haven't they, for another few years.
Yes, I think Sepp Blatter is presently 85. His ban from football was due to expire, I think, sometime this year, but it's now been extended to 2028. And the reason for this is due to FIFA's sort of own investigatory arm feeling that Mr. Blatter had what's regarded as undue economic benefit of around about £18 million. Wow. And there are a couple of other people involved here whose main role appeared to be trying to keep this unusual benefit to Mr. Blatter off the books, is the way that it's described. I'm sure there will be many people, certainly from my family, who will be sort of nodding, saying, "Well, what's the problem there?" This money was on top of his salary, we've also had issues to do with Michel Platini and things of this nature. And on top of the ban from football, he's been fined £780,000. I think that's to cover legal costs, but also for the nature of what he's been accused of doing. Doesn't reflect on Mr. Blatter, who's clearly as a known progressive, the man that suggested that in order for women's football to become more popular, they should wear shorter shorts. So it's good to see that the 1970s is still alive in football mentality in some.
Yeah, it's also hard to believe that nobody knew this. Sepp Blatter was doing this, and it's just, the more you hear about FIFA, the more you think they need to just close it down and start again, don't they? But because every time somebody goes in there to try and sort it out, they just become part of the system, which brings us nicely to UEFA. Now, this news has not quite been ratified, I don't think, Kieran, but rumours coming out that UEFA are planning to relax FFP rules in the coming season, which is something you predicted a while back.
Yeah, this is intriguing. This has been published by an Italian journalist who's, again, one of those people who tends to have his finger on the pulse. Mm. And this came out, we're recording this on Wednesday afternoon, and this story came out a few hours ago. Mm. At present, there's effectively a battle between those clubs that do want quite strict financial controls, because that will reinforce the existing gaps between rich and poor. And therefore it will create a glass ceiling, which will make it more difficult for clubs to do another Manchester City or PSG or Chelsea, i.e. come from a position of not being regular trophy winners in terms of the domestic league, in terms of qualification for the Champions League, to where we are now, where Manchester City have not missed the Champions League for ages. And against that, there are those clubs who feel that if they've got owners who want to put lots of money into the club to make it more competitive, then they should be allowed to do so. And I'm a little bit surprised that this appears to be coming in favour of those clubs that do want to be have given the opportunity to invest more in terms of at present under UEFA rules you can only put in 25 million euro over a 3-year period into the club, which counts towards FFP. If you put in 100 million, only the first 25 million would count. So this does appear to open up opportunities. So we have seen Aston Villa's owners, they're quite keen to invest lots, certainly with Farhad Moshiri at Everton. If the Newcastle deal goes through in due course, we could see more money coming in from PIF and things of this nature, but not only clearly in England, in the Premier League, but also in other divisions as well. So, the final decision, the small print as always, will be the intriguing thing for many people, and just how much these people will be able to invest to make the Champions League and other competitions perhaps more competitive than they are at present in terms of those clubs that qualify for the knockout rounds awaits to be seen.
Mm. Kieran, I don't often get to say this, but here's some genuine good news. And it's happened without Sepp Blatter's advice being taken. The Women's Super League has signed a multi-million pound broadcast deal with Sky and BBC.
Yes, and this deal is going to make the WSL, it's going to be the most lucrative in the world. It looks as if, along with sort of the broadcasting fees and other financial support, it's going to be around about £8 million per annum for the next 3 years. I think initially the BBC and Sky were trying to get a slightly longer deal, but such is the confidence of the Football Association and the people involved with the WSL that they feel that if this is a success, then in 3 years they'll be able to renegotiate at an even higher fee. So I think it's great news. I mean, WSL clubs are all losing money. To be said at present, and therefore they've been reliant upon funding from the clubs to which they're associated. In theory, by having an independent TV deal and more money coming in, and it works out, it's 75% going to WSL clubs and 25% to the Championship. It works out as around about £500,000 per year per club. Now, to give you some form of benchmarking, there are a number of clubs in the WSL, whose total revenue for the whole year is as little as £200,000 a year. Really. So this will make a significant difference. Mm. It will certainly allow more WSL clubs to recruit players from overseas in terms of bringing some of the more high-profile players into WSL, which again is going to become a virtuous circle that increases interest. I think it's very exciting news. And also for those clubs that want to be independent of a men's team. So, you know, we were aware of Durham and Lewis and clubs like of that nature. They financially are quite challenged if they're not connected to a Premier League football club. By having this additional money coming in, it's got to enhance sort of the sporting balance of the sport.
Because that's one thing we need to stress. This is a completely separate deal to the men's game, isn't it?
Yes. Yeah, it's been negotiated independently. You've got to give credit to the negotiators. And I think it also reflects the fact that the present way that we're consuming the sport, which is you can use the red button on the BBC. You do see highlights on the BBC Sports website, which is great, and you see the quality of the game's pretty good. Also nobody is being forced to watch it. So for those blokes who are saying, we're going to get women's football rammed down our throat. No, it's not. Yeah, that's complete nonsense. I don't like some sports, so this is what I do. I don't watch them. Yeah. I don't find Mrs. Brown's Boys funny, so therefore I don't watch it. But I don't complain about if other people enjoy these things of this nature. You know, by all means, go and consume it. So, for heaven's sake, chaps, just grow up.
Mm. Do you know what? My dad loves women's football because he says it reminds him of football in the 60s and 70s, which was a more passing-related game. And I try and remind him that most of the football in the 60s and 70s involved several broken legs and a brawl. But anecdotally, I think that dinosaur attitude you're talking about is disappearing, Kieran. And for the benefit of the court, I'm holding up a piece of paper now, which is my script, on which I'd written the words virtuous circle before, which is a worrying sign that you and I are been doing this far too but it is, I mean, both for the broadcasters and the women's game, it can only be a good thing because the broadcasters are getting a growing product and the women's game is growing because of the broadcasters. So more people will be attending women's games in the next 2 years because they've seen it on telly, youngsters in particular. And if more people go into the games, the broadcasters are getting a better product and more exciting. So it can only be a good thing that half the population are finally being recognised in the world of football. Yeah. Now, Kieran, I was going to put this story last, that on a kind of, on a lighter note, because I assumed the bloke was being funny. But no, on research, it turns out that the accountant who has been running Wigan Athletic this season seriously thinks they should build a statue of him outside the ground, which is a precedent I don't think any of us want to see, Kieran. The occasional pigeon and seagull, and they like to see an accountant. He's not even tongue-in-cheek. No, he thinks there should be a statue of him outside the ground at Wigan.
Yeah, this is a guy called Paul Stanley. Now, this isn't the lead singer of Kiss, by the way. It's a chartered accountant. I mean, he might write the odd occasional song in his spare time, for all I know. But and his background is he is originally from a firm of accountants called Arthur Anderson, who people might remember from being associated and doing the audit of Enron, which was the world's second biggest fraud at the time, and another company called WorldCom, which also was a spectacular global accounting fraud. So he's got a background from a firm of accountants who are no longer in existence because of these things. He had nothing to do with these, I would hasten to add. And all I would say is that as somebody that used to play in the Manchester Accountants Sunday Football League, Arthur Andersons were hated. They were absolutely loathed. They were such a bunch of arrogant sods playing any sport.
Do you know, Kieran, one of the very, very many reasons I love you is because you will say things with a completely straight face along the lines of course, you will all remember that Arthur Anderson was the company that audited Enron. I'm literally scrabbling for a pay of Google, of course. Yes, I'm pleased to hear there's an accountant Sunday league. That must be the only league that referees look forward to refereeing. I would have thought
there were never yellow or red cards. We were all far too polite, except when it came to playing Anderson. Now I don't want to say too much, but a company I subsequently went and worked for, we were involved assisting the recruitment of people for Arthur Andersen's, and the company was always interested in certain characteristics, of which modesty was never one of them. So we then moved to this. Some very strange comments have come out from Mr. Stanley. First of all, he suggested building a statue, and it wasn't. It's not clear. I mean, if it's a joke, it's a strange one to make. He's also complained about the fans, saying, I don't like the fact that I'm getting scrutiny from people who actually aren't that educated. Okay, this is how to win friends and influence people. He's complained that he's not had a holiday since last July. Well, I tell you what, Begbies have earned £2.2 million during that period of time.
Yeah, yeah.
I suspect he won't be going to Pontins this summer, or whenever he does go on holiday. And people have lost their jobs at Wigan. Now that's sad. To then sort of, you know, be bitching about, oh yeah, I'm not. He then said, we can afford to be quite smug about the strategy for the club. Well, smugness is certainly something which he appears to be specialising at. He said that his £660 per hour is half of what's being charged in London. Well, I've looked at some jobs and I've not seen too many at £1,300 an hour. So I don't know where he gets his views from. He doesn't seem to like other people connected to the game. He describes agents as greedy, unregulated barrow boys. I just laugh at spotty teenagers playing Football Manager in their bedrooms.
Wow.
So he's seemingly gone out. He's gone out on the offensive. And the irony, of course, is that one of the people to whom Wigan Athletic have been sold is one of the people that runs Football Manager.
Okay. Do you know what, Kieran? I was willing to give him the benefit of the doubt at the start of this story, but some of those comments he made he's not quite on the Steve Dale list, but he's heading towards it if he carries on this way. That, never underestimate the intelligence of football fans either. That's a big, big mistake. Although, to be fair, now you've put the idea of a statue of an accountant dressed as the lead singer of Kiss in my head, I might start.
Let's start the crowdfunding.
Let's start doing it. Yeah, so basically it'll be the lead singer of Kiss, but with an umbrella rolled under his arm, because that's, in my world, that's how you tell somebody's an accountant. And in your world, Kieran, what a happy week you've had, because three big clubs have put out their latest figures, Middlesbrough, Wolves and Leicester. Anything interesting from those?
I think it's showing that, and these figures are for 2019-20, these figures are showing that COVID really hit the industry, because matches took place after the year end, which didn't help. Wolves lost £40 million. Leicester, who we think are a really well-run club, they've been really smart in terms of recruitment. They sold Harry Maguire for £80 million. They've sold Chilwell for 45, 50, and so on. Leicester lost £67 million. That's £1.5 million a week. It's crazy stuff. And Borough, who had a fairly moderate season in the Championship, they lost £36 million. And for every £100 that was coming through into the club, they were spending £160 on wages, which is just sheer lunacy in the sport. I know that clubs are struggling, that revenues are down a wee bit, but they weren't hugely impacted in the Championship to the same extent as the Premier League. And it does show that clubs cannot run themselves on an even keel and are reliant upon the benevolence of their owners. And it's got to be said that I know that some Middlesbrough fans are quite critical of Steve Gibson, who is, you know, he's thoroughly devoted to the club, just as Mel Morris is at Derby and places like that. Without him writing out those crazy checks on a weekly basis to cover the wages and the other costs, they wouldn't have a club to support.
I'm interested to hear you say that about Borough fans with Steve Gibson, because I always had the impression that he was beyond reproach and beyond criticism almost, because, as you say, he's been there for so long and kept the club on an even keel. But I suppose familiarity breeds contempt for some people to a certain degree, doesn't it?
I'm talking about a minority, but I monitor, I put up the results myself, as you know, on social media, and then look at the response and some of the comments coming in, and the jury is out. It's very much in favour of Steve Gibson, but for every three or four people saying, well, you know, thank heavens for Steve, you've still got one sniping away to say, you know, he lacks ambition, speculate to accumulate. And I'm sure these are not the people that on a Friday, when they get their weekly wages or, you know, on a monthly basis, they go and spunk the whole lot on a lottery card.
Mm. Yeah, I know you put these results out on social media. Did you not see my smiley face that I tweeted back in response? And, you know, on reflection, I should perhaps read these stories before I just put a smiley face on the back of everything. I could be getting into trouble. Another championship club, though, Kieran, Barnsley, have been ordered to pay Hull almost £1 million over the transfer of Angus McDonald. And this is not a nice story, is it? This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by the AI-powered workspace Notion. We are living in an era of information overload and we have more knowledge than ever before. But what do we do with it all? If you're in Notion, you put that knowledge to work.
It's a workspace designed not just for making progress, but getting inspired. And all I can say on a personal level is for somebody whose life is quite chaotic and I'm writing pieces for government and newspapers and media content. I've got my university commitments and I'm supposed to be writing a book. I use Notion all the time because it brings order into chaos.
Well, if you need order brought to your chaos, you can try Notion for free when you go to notion.com/priceoffootball. That's all lowercase letters, notion.com/priceoffootball, and start turning your ideas into action. That's notion.com/priceoffootball.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
No, this is very distressing in a variety of ways. Mm. Barnsley sold Angus McDonald in the summer of 2018 to Hull City for £750,000, and it subsequently turned out that Angus initially had some form of iron deficiency, which didn't appear to be disclosed when the deal was going through. He's subsequently had bowel cancer, which, you know, touch wood, he seems to be in recovery of, and he's been playing for Rotherham this season. But it went to some form of tribunal because Hull felt that they had not necessarily been treated in terms of full disclosure, and the conclusion by the adjudicating panel was there has been no dishonesty, but at the same time Hull have suffered financially as a result of the lack of full disclosure. Mm. And Barnsley have been made to pay £958,000 to Hull as some form of recompense. Now Barnsley are saying that the people who were involved with the sale are no longer at the club and they just want to they want to finish the matter. That, you know, it's let's all move on. And by all accounts, Hull want to do the same. But it's we are dealing not with commodities. We've spoken about this in respect of Emiliano Sala before on a number of occasions. We're dealing with young men, and clearly he's been through a really tough time in terms of his health issues. And all I can say is, you know, you just wish him a full and long term recovery from what he's been through.
Well, I couldn't agree with that more, Kieran, because it's fine for Barnsley to say we want to move on, the people are no longer there. But Angus McDonald had to sit there and listen while Hull City said there's no way on earth we would have signed this player had we known he was in the early stages of bowel cancer, which is like, you don't want to hear that. I mean, when he's still recovering from it. And I think it's wonderful that he's playing for Rotherham this season. And at least Barnsley have had the decency to say they're not going to challenge it, they will pay for it. But it's not a pleasant story. And I suspect, Kieran, that it's one of those things that happens in football a lot more than we know about. Good news for Oxford fans, particularly, Kieran, maybe. An Indonesian-led consortium is in advanced talks to take over Oxford United.
Yes. Oxford United are currently, they currently have a tie owner, and I won't disgrace myself by trying to say his name. I think it involves the word tiger at some point. That's his nickname, so I'll keep to that. The club has been losing around about £80,000 a week pre-COVID, so it's, you know, like many lower league clubs, it has been dependent upon the benevolence of the owner. But there's now a potential Indonesian consortium which is linked to a guy called Eric Tahir. Now, he's the former owner of Inter Milan. He's been involved with the International Olympic Committee. He's also in the MLS, owned DC United. So he knows his way around football. So my initial reaction, it seems, well, yeah, it's a slightly unusual club, given the stature of the clubs he's previously had contact with. But it looks as if he's going to buy 51%. The intention of the club is to make itself, and I quote, a top 30 club, i.e. it wants to progress from League One and try to establish itself in the Championship with the benefits that arises in terms of if you're a top 30 club, you're never that far away from the playoffs. Lots of other people are supposedly connected with the bid, involving, you know, investors from South Africa and Vietnam. So it's a truly global consortium that's being put together. And, you know, I'm old enough, and I suspect you are as well, to remember Oxford United being in the top flight, and, yeah, you know, John Aldridge and Dean Saunders and so on. And was it Ray Houghton was there as well?
Ray Houghton, yeah, scored.
Yeah, yeah, and they were an absolutely cracking club to watch for that period of time. So, yeah, you know, from their point of view, you wish them all the best and hope that these owners have got the best of intentions for them to develop the club.
You know, there's always two things. Whenever Oxford United is mentioned, Kieran, two things go through my head. First of all, Oxford is a wonderful city. I love Oxford. What a beautiful city. But it's a leery away game. Oxford away is surprisingly leery for a place that only 10 miles away is full of Japanese tourists in Hogwarts scarves. but also, when you think about Oxford, you know, we're asked probably once every 3 months, somebody will ask us on the pod, on our questions pod on Mondays, to predict a club or look at a club that's got potential, a lower league club. And to me, it always strikes me that Oxford United should be a club with great potential. It's not that far from London. You've got a very sort of wealthy potential fan base on its doorstep. And it should be a club that can establish itself in the Championship at the very least, shouldn't it, you'd think?
Yes, the potential is there. Sometimes you need a little bit of a kickstart to move into the division in the first place. But then they could certainly generate big crowds. And I agree with you entirely with regards to the away fan experience, having been chased once or twice around my experience. I've been to Oxford. Yeah, I've been around the university and done bits and pieces. That there's not a lot of love between the university stroke student population and the people from the town or the city itself. Yeah. So, this is connected with historic. I wouldn't say they're necessarily taking place in the modern environment. Hostility towards anybody who's not from the locality.
Yeah, I was. A friend of mine, years and years ago, I went there when it was, I went there with a throbbing chip on my shoulder, to be perfectly honest, in my early 20s. But I quite like that idea of that there were town pubs and there were gown pubs. And it's like, well, I'll go to the town pub, thank you very much, because that's going to be much more exciting. Now, Kieran, this story can be read two ways. If I read it like this, a company with close links to Ian Rush is buying the grounds of grassroots clubs. It sounds a bit sinister. If I read it like this, a company with close links to Ian Rush is buying the grounds of grassroots clubs. That sounds great. Which is it? Because when I first read this story, I veered towards sinister rather than great, I have to say.
Yeah, this is a little bit intriguing. This involves a company called Irama Sport, to which Ian Rush has links. And they have already bought the stadium of Whiteleaf FC in Surrey.
Oh, right. Just down
Abingdon
road, yeah.
Town in Oxford. And Brickhouse Town, I think the deal has gone through, which is, of course, in Yorkshire.
Yeah.
And immediately following one of these, Whitelief FC appeared to terminate the lease. And you know, whilst football's not taking place at that particular tier of football at present, it does mean where on earth are they going to play in the future?
Yeah.
And there seems to be bits and pieces of confusion, especially in relation to Whitelief. Their owner is a guy called Mark Coote. He's involved in a company which is involved in 3G pitches. And nobody's quite sure what the ultimate motives are. Firstly, of Irama Sport, who are saying, as a result of this, we'll be in a position to help people in the local towns and villages with the provision of grassroots activities. Ian Rush has said, I've come from nothing. You know, that's my background. I'm really enthusiastic about the ability to provide, especially if it is a 3G pitch, you know, you can have people playing there every evening at a cheap cost for kids and things of that nature. So all of that does sound positive. What Irama Sport's ulterior motives are, if there are any, and you know, we can't say that with any degree of certainty, is uncertain. But they've also written to a number of parish councils saying things along the lines of, we're looking to buy football grounds. And yeah, we're operating in a COVID environment. The clubs that we've mentioned have been through some challenging financial periods recently, and that's made it. It's not forced them to sell the ground, but it certainly has been a factor, I suspect. So I'd like to get more information on this. Just to find out exactly what's been going on. I think Whitelief FC's their manager, who was previously the Croydon FC manager. I think he's now resigned. He's moved on. We're not quite sure what's happening there. So just a feeling of unease would be my overall conclusion.
Yeah, and one hopes that their motives are pure and that they want to bring football to locals. But Whitelief is not far beyond Croydon. It's a really nice semi-rural area, and I suspect there'd be far more people in there interested in going to a new Waitrose than they would in playing football on a 3G pitch. But we'll keep an eye on that one, because it's when you see them buying up so many or checking the availability of so many, it does get the hackles rising a little bit. Rangers have raised more money from shareholders.
Yes. So this came through from Companies House. They issued a large number of shares, which appears to have brought in an extra £3 million. Now, it's not entirely clear whether this is fresh cash or converting loans into shares. Rangers are losing money on a day-to-day basis, although I think they will be in a position this summer, should they so desire, to cover a lot of those losses. Their business model has been, first of all, to be able to challenge Celtic on the pitch, and therefore they've tried to hold on to players. Once they've reached that position of parity on the pitch, and clearly they are the deserved champions this season. You know, will they now be selling the likes of Morelos or some of the other players, and therefore moving towards more of a player development model in order to make ends meet? But you know, over the last quite a few years since they had their problems and they've had to move through the divisions, it's very much been paying a lot more for players and paying much higher wages than their revenues, and as a consequence, they have been losing money. My slight concern here is, where does this leave the fan base? Because Dave King, who was the previous chief of the club, he had agreed to sell his shares to a fans group called Club 1872. Mm. Now, this was going to cost Club 1872 an awful lot of money. They've been doing their best to raise funds, but you know, we are talking millions upon millions of pounds here. And if Rangers are issuing fresh shares, what Club 1872's strategy was to own 25% of the club. And by owning 25% of the club, that allows you to veto certain things. And I think Dave King was keen on this and Club 1872. Every time you issue fresh shares, it means that Club 1872 would have to go and buy more shares in order to keep up their 25% investment, which as yet they haven't achieved because they are in the fundraising stage. So it is going to make it what is already a challenging feat for them. It's going to make it more complex. And if Rangers keep on issuing shares every time that happens, then Club 1872 will have to raise more cash if they want to keep their 25% investment, which, given that they are a fan organisation and they get nothing back from this because Rangers don't pay out dividends, just like the vast majority of clubs, is going to be tough.
What are the certain things that Club 1872 could veto with 25%?
It's mainly to do with changes in the club constitution,
right?
The sale of the stadium or things of that nature. And therefore, it allows the fans to keep an eye and be fully informed, because they'd affect they should be able to appoint a director. And if there are issues similar to those experienced by Rangers, which led to the troubles at the club in respect of employee benefit trusts in the last decade, at least they will be able to scrutinise them and potentially put some form of veto on things of that nature.
So it would be lovely, wouldn't it, Kieran, if every club had at least 25% fan ownership so they could do that sort of thing. I've been looking forward to this, Kieran, because this, as far as I'm concerned, this is the perfect final story. I can say on a lighter note with a glad heart on this one, because, Kieran, on a lighter note, there's been some good news for Boiler fans in the West Midlands.
Yes, the fantastic news is that West Bromwich Albion have extended their relationship, their sponsorship deal with Boilerman, who is the club mascot, who was initially a figure of great ridicule, but has now become a bit of a cult hero. Uh-huh. It's now gone to a company called Ideal Heating, because they want to broaden the range of products that they sell and not just be associated with boilers. West Brom have had a bit of a checkered history in terms of their sponsors. They were sponsored by Zoopla, who cancelled the sponsorship arrangement about 6 or 7 years ago now, as a result of Nicholas Anelka's probably ill-advised support for one of the Charlie Hebdo comedians, or whatever you want to call it. I think that's an insult to people in your industry. Mm-hmm. They've had to use gambling companies and things of that nature since, but it's actually quite nice. And to have a local company who, not that local, but a company which is involved in an industry which you can't really get too upset about. We've seen with the activities of Football Index, we've certainly seen concerns, and we've spoken to people who have reservations about football's very close links with the gambling industry. This is about heating your home, so no grumbles there.
Yeah, we all need boilers, Kieran. What I will say is that I've met several mascots. They take their job very seriously, and rightly so, because they represent their club. But at least there's an element of pride clambering into a giant latex eagle on a Saturday afternoon, isn't it? Really, I'm sure when they all come to meet up at the end of the season, they can tell who Boilerman is, because he's the one who's slouching in. Good luck to it. Might be a woman inside Boilerman. That's a terrible assumption to make, isn't it? In this day and age.
Exactly.
Yes. Thank you, Kieran. I'll take your implied telling off. To heart. Now, don't forget, if you'd like to support The Price of Football, you can do by visiting supporter.acast.com/priceoffootball, or just click the link if you're listening in the Acast app. A big thank you to everyone who has supported us so far, including Akshat Kumar, Rob NUFC, Ruthin Roy. Roy, how many names are you using these days? Like Kieran's family, seriously. Pete D, Grace, John M54 #CAFC, and Sisyphus was a Charlton fan. which is my favourite name for quite some time. Very good classical reference. That made me chuckle. Don't forget, if you want to ask us questions for our Monday pod, which is about any aspect of football finance in any corner of the world, it's questions@priceoffootball.com. And before he schleps off to Barcelona for his, what sounds like a very important virtual visit, I shall invite Kieran to say goodbye.
Thanks again, folks, for all the feedback. If you could press the follow button on Apple and leave us a 5-star review, that's apparently the big issue as far as producer Guy is concerned. And also just a reminder that we are honoured to have Neil Doncaster on the show in a couple of weeks. And Neil has agreed to answer questions. So if you want to direct the questions at us, it will be questions@priceoffootball.com. And if you can put Scotland in the header, we'll know these are for Neil. We've got a good relationship with Neil, mainly because we think he's a good guy.
We do.
Just be polite. I've seen some hostile comments on social media, which aren't warranted. And it's not going to be a discussion on Celtic and Rangers, by the way. It's looking at the broader issues of Scottish football.
Yes, well said. And Neil has made it quite clear. He will answer any difficult questions we put to him, as long as they're put to him politely and respectfully. And of course, anything else, we simply won't put to him. So come on, people, you're better than that. We know you. And we'll see you soon.
Bye-bye. The Price of Football. Price of Football.